From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. For the past 2 years, I've been following the case of a man named Larry Peterson. Over the next 2 days, you'll hear his story. Peterson was convicted and then cleared of a violent crime. But even when the state agreed he was no longer guilty, the burden fell on him to prove that he is innocent. Only if he can prove that will he be compensated for more than 17 years in prison. During those 17 years, the prosecution and the murder victim's family believed that justice had been served, and they opposed his every appeal. During that time, there was also a revolution in forensic science, the use of DNA. But for that scientific revolution and the work of the Innocence Project from New York City's Cardozo Law School, Larry Peterson would still be in prison. He would still be deemed guilty of murder. As for being deemed innocent, Larry Peterson is still waiting for that.
Oh, there he is.
In August 2005, Peterson's mother waited outside a New Jersey county jail as he walked toward her and toward his own freedom. The soundtrack of his liberation was the clatter of camera shutters. The news photographers tracked him as he approached his mother's embrace. When he went behind bars in the 1980s, he was a skinny, irresponsible guy in his late 30s, an admitted heavy drinker, drug abuser, and sometime petty thief. Now, he was a beefy 54-year-old and a professed born-again Christian. Much was different. One thing was the same. He had always protested his innocence.
It's all good. You all right?
It's okay.
You all right?
Hmm?
It's okay. It's okay. It's all good. This thing is about over.
Okay, clear.
There was a lot of history leading up to the moment of Larry Peterson's release. I first met him a few months earlier, in April 2005. He was still in Trenton State Prison, and he expected to get out soon. We met in an interview room with his lawyer beside him. His hair was cropped close, and he was wearing the brown uniform of an inmate at Trenton State, where he had spent half his adult life.
17 years, 5 months, 28 days, and a few hours.
Larry Peterson was an army brat who grew up mostly in Germany. He says his brothers all went to college. One brother retired as a major in the Marine Corps. Larry joined the army and was honorably discharged.
I went back to Europe, and there I lived on the economy as a civilian, crime-free, jail-free, until I returned to America, to Pemberton, New Jersey. And I became involved with the wrong people, abused various substances, and I just fell into a rut. My life haven't always been an honorable life. And I've ran into a lot of things that I didn't intend to run into due to my addictions. But I've never been a murderer, never been a rapist.
In the 1970s, he did have a conviction for breaking and entering and one for bouncing a check. He makes no excuses for the passions of his former life.
Alcohol, drugs, nightlife, riotous living. It was my downfall.
In those days, he said, he made his living in the woods, collecting and coiling vines, the kind that stores sell as ornamental wreaths. At Trenton State, Peterson told me he had survived prison by getting religion and by dreaming dreams. He wanted to buy a farm.
I love chickens. I love chickens. You know, I love to see them come from being incubated to being raised. This is my desire for life, man, chickens.
And the life that he'd left behind in his 30s, drinking, drugs.
Do you know, I am born again now, and it's nothing that out there that I can't get here. I haven't drunk anything. I haven't smoked anything. I haven't snorted anything. I have not put a hypodermic needles in my arm. And you have all that stuff right here.
In the prison.
In the prison. Better than what's out there. I got no need for marijuana. I got no need for no alcohol. I can do without. I don't need it. See, I'm good now. I can work this. I know how to work this.
But freedom, free, literally, you're on the verge of regaining your freedom.
Let me just get drunk with it.
Well, freedom is the freedom yes. to do bad things as well as to do good things. Freedom means you can do what you want to do. You're confident.
It's all good. I think you can look across the table from yourself today, and you will want a taste of this. When you meet me and we are both out there together, you will smile. Many people say, can any good thing come out of Trent State? Well, something is about to come out of Trent State that's good.
Larry Leon Peterson.
Larry Leon Peterson. Young fella. It's good.
The story of Larry Peterson's battle with the state of New Jersey began one night in August 1987. Jacqueline Harrison of Pemberton, New Jersey, got off from her catering job at a school for the developmentally disabled. She dropped off her two kids with her sister, Patricia. She was 25, small, slim, and single, and she was going out for the evening. Her daughter, Andrea, was just a toddler then.
We were on our way to go out, and my mommy was on her way home from work, and she was coming down the street, and we kind of waved out the car window, Mommy, come on, you know, let's go, you can come. And she was saying, she was just getting off work, and she was saying that she was tired. She was going to go in and take a nap, and for us to just go out with my grandma and my aunt and just, you know, go out and have a little good time, and she would see us when we came back.
Jacqueline Harrison didn't come back, so her sister Patricia called the police.
Then I got an officer on the phone, and I said I'd like to report my sister missing. What was she wearing? And I described everything down to her pocketbook, and the officer said, your sister was found murdered a couple of houses down, one street over. He told me that on the phone. Now, mind you, at my feet were my sister Sheila's son, who was in diapers, was my three-year-old daughter, was Jackie's daughter, the younger and the older, and Jackie's mother. They're all reading, looking into my mouth, and this officer is saying, oh, we found her dead.
Jacqueline Harrison was a single mother of two employed as a cottage attendant at the New Lisbon State School. Her partially nude body was discovered last
Jacqueline
night.
Jacqueline Harrison's assailant had raped her, strangled her, violated her with a stick. It had evidently happened after a night of partying, crack cocaine, and sex with more than one man.
She's no bigger than a nickel. She wouldn't have hurt anyone. They didn't have to do it. They didn't have to do it.
Jacqueline Harrison's grief-stricken family says she would occasionally stay out overnight, but would always come home.
Over the coming days and weeks, Patricia Harrison saw her sister's entire life reduced to a news story. Jacqueline's childhood on army bases in Germany and Alaska, her job, her children. For strangers, none of that existed. All they knew were news accounts of a broken corpse in the woods and a reckless weekend.
All they read and believe is what was printed in that paper. And it's a shame. It's a shame.
Her life gets summed up by a few hours of her life.
Absolutely.
In which her life is taken and then whatever else she may have done in the hours preceding.
Absolutely. Of course, the circumstances of the crime. Oh, my God. Oh, that's horrible. And then they read on. And they read it again. And it's in the paper again and again. And it's embedded in their mind.
The crime was all over the local news, and there were no leads. Then, a woman Larry Peterson knew saw fresh scratch marks on his arms. Considering his work with vines, it wasn't unusual. But to her, that suggested a recent struggle. She told the police, and they focused on Peterson.
Two detectives came to see me at a job I was working down my lumber. And they said, well, we'd like to talk to you. I said, I got nothing to talk to you about. They said, well, you're not going to talk to us? I said, no. They said, well, if you don't, you're under arrest. I said, okay, let's talk. What are we going to talk about? They said, well, we want to talk about someone that got killed. I told them at that time I didn't know anything. I don't know anybody that had did anything. And as far as I'm concerned, they was barking up the wrong tree.
3 weeks later, Peterson was arrested, jailed, and charged with capital murder and sexual assault. For 17 months, he sat in jail until his trial began in February 1989 in Mount Holly, New Jersey. The trial went on for several weeks, and at the heart of the government's case was some forensic evidence that sounded pretty strong. Gail Teague was a forensic scientist at the New Jersey State Police Lab. She testified about pieces of hair that were found on the victim's body and on the stick with which she was assaulted. Teague used a forensic term of art that was common in those days before DNA testing. She said the bits of hair and control samples of Larry Peterson's hair had been examined under a microscope and they compared. The prosecutor, Michael Riley, went a step further. He said they matched. In this reading from the court transcript, Riley questions Teague.
When I use the term match, what does that term mean to you, ma'am?
Okay. Match is another term like comparison. It means it fits the same criteria, fits into the same range. It matches, or it also compares.
Now, lab specimen number 18.
The hair is compared, the hair is matched. This was the only physical evidence against Peterson. And in his summation, the prosecutor, Riley, made even more of those pieces of hair. Again, this is a reading from the transcript.
Larry left behind pieces of himself. I told you that in my opening. I think you understand it now. He left behind a little bit of himself, his pubic hairs, and a fragment of his head hair. Every single hair which was found in that poor girl's body was either hers or matched microscopically and physically to Larry Peterson.
Peterson said he was nowhere near the crime scene and never touched Jacqueline Harrison. So what was his hair doing on her body and on the instrument of her abuse if he was innocent? Well, here's what Peterson's lawyer, John Furlong, said in his summation about that critical physical evidence. Again, it's a reading from the trial transcript.
Ladies and gentlemen, we can all differ about the meaning of words, and perhaps I am being a semanticist, but match and compare are two different words, falling into the same range, and these are his hairs are two different propositions.
It was semantics versus science, and science won. There was more to the case against Larry Peterson. There was Peterson's friend, Robert Elder. He testified that they had gone to work together at a lumber yard on the very morning of Jacqueline Harrison's murder, a few hours after the crime. Elder said the two of them hitched a ride, and in the car, Peterson vividly described how he did it. Again, this is an actor reading from the transcript.
He said, "Beef, man, I met this girl, and she was, you know, different girl from all the other girls." And he said he forced her clothes off, and he f***ed her, and he f***ed her, and after he f***ed her, he held her up like a butterfly in his hand, and he didn't like the way it was.
Elder said that Peterson described attacking the woman with a stick.
And he said, "B, something came over me, man. You know, I just snapped." And then he said, well, after he said he snapped.
What with Elder's testimony, two men from the front seat of the car who said they overheard some of this, and above all, Larry Peterson's hair on Jacqueline Harrison's body, the case against Peterson sounded strong, even to him.
If I was sitting on the jury, I would be inclined to convict the person also. Hearing
what they were saying,
yes,
about you. And to the great relief of Jacqueline Harrison's sister, Patricia, that's just what the jury did.
We were at peace in that the case was closed. Her murderer was not walking the streets. It was documented guilty.
Larry Peterson, whose hair compared with the hairs found on Jacqueline Harrison, was sentenced to 40 years.
This is our central regional laboratory.
Today, the forensic science that helped convict Larry Peterson is horse and buggy stuff. In 1989, New Jersey crime labs didn't yet do DNA analysis. Now, at New Jersey's three-year-old central crime lab, 75 people work on DNA.
Our cases come from all over the state, from local, county, as well as state agencies.
In 2005, Ajit Tungari, the chief forensic scientist, gave me a tour. He said the crime lab does many things other than analyze DNA, for example, microscopic examination of paint and fiber, and even in some cases still, hair. Why bother with this now with human hair if you could do DNA instead with human hair?
Well, the reason for this is we don't use this routinely for human hair comparisons at all. In the old days or in the past, you would do the microscopic examination and you would say the hairs compared. and that's where you would end.
The hairs compare.
If they compare, you would say they compared, and that would be the end of hair examination. We have since found out that microscopically they might compare, but when you do DNA analysis, we find out that some of them don't.
So what you were doing with the microscope way back when you were...
has become a screening tool.
Just
now.
A screening tool.
Exactly.
A screening tool can rule someone out and avoid the expense of DNA tests. But the forensic science that identified Larry Peterson as a murderer in 1989 is what Mr. Tungati speaks of as what they used to do in the old days, the days before DNA analysis. From prison, Peterson appealed his case and lost, but he kept trying to prove his innocence.
When I found out about DNA testing, I said, well, this would be one sure way to prove my innocence. And I started seeking DNA, I think it was in 95 or 96. I even requested of my attorney to request that the courts would grant me DNA to prove my innocence. I was denied. And it's taken me a little over 10 years before I was granted DNA testing. And still the courts fight against me. I mean, it's just been hell all the way.
By 2005, with the help of the Innocence Project, Peterson had won the right to have those bits of hair from his trial tested for his DNA.
Were you 100% confident that it would come back vindicating you?
Of course I was.
And what'd you think?
Of course it was great. It's great. I wanted to be shouted from the rooftops.
The tests had shown that the pieces of hair weren't his. They were Jacqueline Harrison's, the victim's. What's more, DNA analysis had turned up the tissue and semen of another man, a Mr. X, whose presence had completely eluded the crime lab back in the 80s. The prosecution had fought for and won even more DNA tests on hair that had been collected at the crime scene but never used in court. They were searching for literally some shred of evidence to link Peterson to the crime. Those additional DNA tests came back the same as the first round, a clean sweep for Larry Peterson.
Dave, can we get Mr. Peterson, please?
Yes, sir.
In July 2005, Peterson was in Judge Thomas Smith's courtroom in Mount Holly, New Jersey.
Okay, we are on the record in the matter of State of New Jersey versus Larry Peterson. That's 87-00-0828. Would counsel note the appearances for the record, please?
Judge, good afternoon, sir. For the state, Assistant County Prosecutor Thaddeus Drummond.
Vanessa Potkin from the Innocence Project for the defendant, Larry Peterson.
Okay. Now, I'm going to tell you.
Three generations of Jacqueline Harrison's family sat together, impeccably dressed. They made a visible statement that she had been a person with parents and siblings and children. Over the years, the prosecutor's staff had kept them in the loop as Larry Peterson tried to reverse his conviction. For Jacqueline Harrison's sister, Patricia, justice had long ago been served, and it was not undone by the DNA tests on the bits of hair.
Well, your hair could have been there. My hair, my husband's hair, anyone. That does not mean that he did not take her last breath. That does not mean that.
You're convinced of that, that he did?
Absolutely. DNA is a wonderful thing. Don't get me wrong. I believe in that. But in this case, circumstantial evidence, there's so many other factors that were brought out in court in our public record that say, yes, Mr. Peterson definitely committed this murder. The DNA is not the gospel, for lack of a better word, in this case.
But the physical evidence that had been used to identify Peterson had been discredited. Judge Thomas Smith.
The court will vacate the conviction under indictment 87-11-0828 for felony murder and aggravated sexual assault.
So, in the eyes of the law, Larry Peterson was no longer guilty of the crime. The 1989 conviction was thrown out. But the prosecution intended to retry him for the same offense. As Judge Thomas Smith told the courtroom, the DNA tests had weakened the case.
I would be remiss if I did not recognize that the strength of the state's case is different at this point. We've got substantial biological evidence that would tend to indicate that, in fact, Mr. Peterson was not involved in the offense. I acknowledge that. Anybody looking at the evidence would acknowledge that. But that does not mean that there cannot be a conviction in this case.
It's meriting retrying this case against Mr. Peterson.
After the hearing, opposing lawyers told clusters of reporters in the lobby outside the courtroom what they thought of a second trial almost 2 decades after the crime. County Prosecutor Robert Bernardi said it made sense.
He still could be found, as the judge said, in open court, could still be found guilty of this offense. We'll let 12 people decide that. That's what their job is, not ours.
Do you acknowledge, as the judge said anyone would, that the state's case is weaker now than it was before?
Of course it is. That's a no-brainer. It's weaker now than it was, but it's certainly not an untriable case.
This is just a ludicrous position.
For lawyer Vanessa Potkin of the Innocence Project, retrying Peterson was unconscionable.
And it's unfortunately very hard to admit when mistakes are made in the criminal justice system. This is not, unfortunately, atypical for the state to cling to a conviction that has been disproven by DNA testing.
But for County Prosecutor Bernardi, there were still those witnesses from the car, especially Peterson's friend, Robert Elder.
Have we spoken to the witnesses?
Recently.
Yes.
Are they all willing to testify again?
I'm not going to comment on willingness or unwillingness. We've spoken to them.
So the case would go on. Peterson was no longer a convict, but he was awaiting trial, so he went from state prison to the county jail. It took his mother another month to raise $20,000 to post bail. And on August 27, 2005, almost 18 years after he was taken into custody, Larry Peterson walked out.
So, what do you think?
First and foremost, I give praise and thanks to God, my mom, my attorneys. It's just good to be out here and breathe some fresh air.
Larry Peterson's problems were far from over. He was out of prison, but also out of work. He had to report to a court clerk every week, and his mother was now in debt. Above all, he was now awaiting another trial for the rape and murder of Jacqueline Harrison. But he was no longer behind bars.
The best is yet to come. No more jail, no more prison. Can I just act a fool for him?
We'll hear what happened to him next in the concluding part of this story tomorrow.
To help make sense of the twists and turns in Larry Peterson's 17-year odyssey through the judicial system, go to our website at npr.org. There you'll find a timeline of his case and profiles of some of the key players. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.